As part of its 2021 Year in Review, Observer Radio First presents a summary of events of the year. This will be presented under four themes: COVID-19, society, politics, and crime. The first theme, COVID-19, is meant to be a recap of the course of the COVID-19 pandemic in Antigua and Barbuda throughout the year 2021.
As we look back at how the COVID-19 pandemic evolved in the year 2021, we begin with the first quarter of the year, January, February, and March. Few could forget that in these first few months, Antigua and Barbuda was grappling with what was then its most serious rise in cases of COVID-19. Throughout January 2021, cases began to rise into double digits, prompting the government on January 29th to introduce an 8 p.m. to 5 a.m. curfew, during which time residents were prohibited from being outdoors. There was, too, the forced closure of all bars and gyms and limiting restaurants and other eateries to takeaway meals only. It was also decided that school children would have to learn online and keep the classrooms empty. Now, at the end of January 2021, there were 39 active cases of COVID-19, and 14 of those people were hospitalized. A little over 2 weeks later, on February 16th, there were 270 active cases of COVID-19, and 40 people were hospitalized. It was at this point that the government was facing mounting pressure to enforce a national shutdown to prevent COVID-19 cases from spiraling out of control. Instead, and on the basis that another shutdown in February might have serious ripple effects for the economy and daily life, the government chose to tighten the curfew and beef up restrictions. So from the 16th of February, a 6 p.m. to 5 a.m. curfew went into effect, something anyone listening would surely remember. A national debate ensued on whether the new restrictions would be enough to arrest the rapidly climbing number of COVID-19 cases. Many felt a strict lockdown was necessary, but many others were in dread at the serious harm it would do to the already ailing economy and the business sector. Still, doctors, both public and private, were warning that the situation at the hospital especially was becoming extremely severe, to the point of being overwhelming. People were being told to remain indoors, for the most part, unless absolutely necessary. Business owners and employees alike were being encouraged to do all that was possible to decrease traffic in their workspaces. Some establishments like bars, restaurants, and gyms would either be forced to drastically reduce their business or pause operations altogether. In Antigua and Barbuda, by the last day of February, which was the 28th, there were 448 active cases of COVID-19 and 52 people were hospitalized. But alas, in the last 2 weeks of February came the rollout of the public vaccination program, and with the arrival of a first batch of 5,000 AstraZeneca vaccine doses donated to Antigua and Barbuda by the government of Dominica. At the beginning of March, 40,000 AstraZeneca doses were sent for Antigua and Barbuda by the government of India. This began what would now seem to have been a highly impactful and pivotal public immunization campaign that has greatly reduced the damage that COVID-19 could wreak in the population. By mid-March of 2021, more than 19,000 people in Antigua and Barbuda had been vaccinated with a first dose of AstraZeneca. The early turnout was strong. So strong, in fact, that vaccine sites were at one point in early March overwhelmed with anxious and even somewhat irate crowds of people seeking to get inoculated. It led to some iconic scenes of confusion at a few sites before the health ministry brought greater order to the process. Who could forget Health Minister Sir Malwyn Joseph, pictured standing outside one vaccine center, trying to direct the crowds around him and part the sea of people trying to get inside, somewhat like Moses. The situation inside vaccine centers was completely different by most reports, and this was true throughout the year, a far more orderly and controlled process. The wave of infections that swept the country into a frenzy in January and February seemed to temper in March in the face of vaccination and consistent, albeit costly, COVID restrictions. But the first quarter of the year did not pass without one more COVID scare, namely the outbreak that swept through the prison. On March 13th, around the middle of the month, the prison confirmed that three officers and 30 inmates had tested positive. This began a process of rapidly erecting isolation units at the Defense Forces Crabs base in order to move infected persons out of the prison. By March 28th, the curfew had been relaxed back to 8 p.m. instead of 6 p.m. Indoor dining was allowed, and over 25,000 people had been vaccinated with at least one dose. By the end of March, the COVID-19 situation appeared to have been tamed. On the 31st of that month, there were 262 active cases. By this time, 28 people had died of COVID-19 in Antigua and Barbuda since the pandemic began in earnest in March of 2020. We now move into the second quarter of the year as it related to COVID-19. And in these 3 months, April, May, and June, the caseload continues the steady decline that began back in March. By mid-April, active cases were down to 233, with just 4 persons hospitalized. It was at this time, mid-April, that the 8 p.m. curfew was moved to an 11 p.m. curfew, a relief for many businesses. Gyms were allowed to resume operations later. Nevertheless, a U.S. Level 4 travel advisory advising people not to travel to Antigua and Barbuda was still in effect around this time. The last update for April, which came out on April 27th, showed active cases were down to 186. In April as well, news surrounding rare but potentially fatal blood clots related to the AstraZeneca vaccine was causing ripples throughout the world. In the UK and in the European Union, different regulators were changing the rules on which age group should be offered the jab, seeing that under 30s might be more likely to suffer from the highly rare but serious blood clots. Now, throughout the pandemic, there were many stories of infection and recovery worth telling. In general, they all demonstrated that COVID-19 is a deadly and/or debilitating disease for many people who catch it, and that regardless of their age and wellness, it can do serious harm. Near the end of April, one of Antigua and Barbuda's most recognizable athletes, high jumper Priscilla Frederick Loomis, described contracting COVID-19 much earlier in the year. Despite being just 32 years old and being in constant prime fitness, Frederick said COVID left her feeling physically devastated, having zero energy and being confined to bed rest. She reported sinus pains, headaches, and chills for 3 weeks, in addition to what she called massive chest pains. It was a stark reminder that COVID-19 did not discriminate and that the virus poses a risk to everyone. In May, what began in April as a steady decline in persons seeking to get inoculated became a much more serious issue of public health concern. Vaccine hesitancy, as we now commonly refer to it, was hampering the national effort to preserve life. That hesitancy was due to a complex mix of factors. Some were genuinely uneasy about a vaccine developed rapidly, though national and international authorities and experts repeatedly assured that no corners had been cut. Some were genuinely confused and misled by the torrents of evolving vaccine misinformation that were by now dominating certain online forums and digital spaces. One doctor, Dr. Courtney Lewis, who is the vice chair of the National Technical Working Group on COVID-19 vaccines, admitted then that vaccine education needed to have been stronger at the onset of the rollout in February and continuous thereafter. There were other persons who were not so much vaccine hesitant, but more rightly anti-vaxxers. These were persons who downright opposed the idea of vaccination altogether, and often on the basis of an innumerable raft of falsehoods and conspiracies, and discredited professionals. Who could forget the rather comical, though serious, square-off between health workers running a vaccination clinic at Market Street one weekend near the end of April, and a group of protesters, some screaming about the US government's top infectious disease expert, Dr. Anthony Fauci, and, quote, war crimes. It was around this time, April and May, that the cabinet ministers and top administrative officials began giving public hints that mandatory vaccination might be a future policy. And thus, the public debate over mandatory vaccination began. By May 8th, around a week into May, the caseload had plummeted from triple digits to just 31 active cases and 5 hospitalizations. By the end of May, the 31st, there were just 5 active cases and no hospitalizations. In June, there was some debate over the issue of allowing for the return of fetes and live events. There was a lot of wrangling and a lot of criticism of the decision to move ahead with it, though many argued the social and economic impact was much needed. June ended on a high note. Between June 16th and the end of the month, laboratory-confirmed COVID-19 cases actually remained at zero. The immense efforts of health workers, doctors, administrators, and leaders had clearly amounted to something remarkable. At the same time, some 36,000 people had been vaccinated by the end of June with at least one dose of a vaccine. But by this point, a total of 42 people had died of COVID-19. At this point, we enter the third quarter of the year, July, August, and September, far more eventful months as regards COVID-19 and the response to it. Russian and Chinese vaccines became available during these 3 months, and vaccine hesitancy made it clear in July that Antigua and Barbuda would not rapidly get to a high degree of inoculation without a new approach. The question was, what should be the approach? Would education and campaigning work, particularly in the face of a rabid COVID-19 misinformation and anti-vax commentary on a national level? What about incentives? July, for example, was one month in which many were being offered free gas, land on raffle, and other state-sponsored incentives in order to get vaccinated. A little over a week into July, two vaccine centers were closed to consolidate their operations in the face of trickling foot traffic at those sites. Around the same time, it was announced that very high-efficacy U.S.-donated Pfizer vaccines were bound for Antigua and Barbuda. Throughout July, the government intensified its efforts to compel persons to become vaccinated without a broad mandate. Travel and quarantine requirements were introduced to make the demands on vaccinated persons less onerous, thereby making the demands on unvaccinated persons more onerous. By the third week in July, the government mandated twice-monthly testing for unvaccinated state employees in frontline and other roles, or they were to stay home unpaid. After a backlash, it made testing free of cost to workers. Additionally, it imposed a vaccinated-only regulation on bars, clubs, and restaurants. Proof of vaccination was to be requested by proprietors. By July 30th, there were 25 active cases and 3 people hospitalized, and the Delta variant was confirmed as being present in the country. This was the subtle beginning of the worst wave of infections we had yet seen, one which would progress rapidly upwards over the next few months. Some hotels announced around this time that they would only cater to vaccinated tourists for their staff's own safety. There was a cluster of cases at the Royalton. And it was in August, too, that the Alpha, Beta, Delta, and Gamma variants of COVID-19 were all confirmed as having been detected in Antigua and Barbuda. Johnson & Johnson vaccines arrived on island around this time as well. The Delta variant, specifically, was believed to be behind a wave of cases at that time moving throughout the Eastern Caribbean, and not just locally. Delta is more transmissible than some other variants. By mid-August, there were 88 active cases and 4 people hospitalized. By the end of the month, bars and gyms were again told to halt operations. Prohibitions on gathering numbers got tighter, and the curfew went from 11 p.m. back to 8 p.m. On August 31st, there were 326 active cases and 23 COVID patients in the hospital. This trend would not abate. And at the same time, too, we were being told that the hospital was near its capacity in handling COVID-19 patients. In September, Barbuda counted its first COVID-19 death on the 2nd of that month. Infections increased dramatically each week thereafter. By mid-September, on the 16th, there were 857 cases of COVID-19 and 39 people were hospitalized. It is around this time, mid-September, that the mandatory testing policy was abandoned for unvaccinated state employees in favor of a mandatory vaccination policy. The idea was be vaccinated or stay home. Many resolved to get jabbed as a result. September was the worst month in terms of mortality. The total number of COVID deaths climbed to 79 by the last day of that month. It was at 44 deaths at the end of the previous month, August, which meant that around 35 people had died from COVID-19 in September. The month ended with 946 active cases, 48 of which were hospitalized, and it was announced late in the month that both the hospital and the infectious disease center were at capacity in terms of dealing with COVID patients. In the final quarter of the year, October, November, and December, the COVID situation peaked, then finally abated. October saw the greatest variance in numbers. Just a week into October, on the 7th of the month, cases reached their highest ever tally at 1,158 active infections. Some 53 people were hospitalized, and 88 people had by then died with COVID-19. At this time, a gradual relaxation of restrictions began, which would see the curfew move back to 11 p.m. and eateries and gyms able to open to vaccinated patrons. Just over a week later, by mid-October, specifically the 15th, active cases had drastically fallen to 743 and hospitalizations had dropped to 35. Yet, five more people had by then died with COVID-19. 2 weeks later, by the end of October, active cases had plummeted to 214. Hospitalizations were down to 17, but nine more people had by then died with COVID-19, bringing the total number of deaths at that point, at the end of October, to 102 persons. Some 56,000 people were, by the end of October, either partially or fully vaccinated. At the beginning of November, a broad workplace vaccine mandate was applied to the private sector: be vaccinated or stay home. Similarly, a vaccine mandate for vaccine-eligible school students was announced as well. But by the third week in November, the school policy had been relaxed to a testing policy for unvaccinated students, reportedly in response to a rapid uptake in vaccination, which meant that an 80% threshold of students being vaccinated had been met. The vaccine mandate in the public sector was also reverted to a testing mandate for unvaccinated workers, reportedly in response to an 80% threshold of public workers being vaccinated having been met. In the private sector, the rule became that a workplace could revert to a testing mandate for unvaccinated persons when 80% of the overall staff had already been jabbed. By mid-November, there were 98 active cases. And by the end of the month, there were just 6 active cases and 2 hospitalizations. Sadly, by now, however, 15 more people had died with COVID-19, bringing the total number of deaths to that point to 117 people. In December, the state of emergency and the accompanying curfew were ended altogether, but the final month of the year ended with a troubling trend, as active cases stood at 101 by the 30th of December, though only 2 people were hospitalized. Many worry it's an early sign of a post-Christmas wave of infections, just as occurred at the very beginning of 2021.
Observer Radio's summary of the events of 2021 is presented under 4 themes: COVID-19, society, politics, and crime. The second theme, society, is meant to be a recap of most of the major events that shaped our lives and stole our attention in 2021. We will focus on work, business, the economy, education, activism, culture, and current affairs outside of politics.
We begin once more with the first quarter of the year, January, February, and March. The year began on a somber note, so to speak, for the tourism industry. Not that the overall economy itself was not also badly affected by the pandemic, but tourism is the main industry and puts food on the table for many citizens of all income categories. The sector was seriously impacted by the lockdown in the United Kingdom at the beginning of the year, meaning that there were fewer people likely to take a holiday. Internationally, who could forget the images of the US Capitol riots blasted across every TV and phone screen in the month of January, as pro-Trump protesters began a riot that breached the US legislature and sent its members fleeing. Here at home, our own protests were taking place. Picketers in January were demanding that the Governor General open a special independent inquiry into the infamous and gruesome 2020 murder of Customs Officer Nigel Christian. While the police were still on the case in January, the kidnap and execution-style nature of Christian's killing, along with a hotly debated broker's fraud scandal that was an issue at Customs at the time of his murder, would convince many that there were deeper issues of corruption behind his death that needed to be probed. While the picket was UPP-led, we included it under our society theme since Nigel Christian's murder is not a political issue. In response to the protest, the Prime Minister Gaston Brown called the action needless and accused the opposition of politicizing the office of the Governor General. Another memorable fiasco from this part of the year was the controversy surrounding a promotional video by Citizenship by Investment agent Kevin Hossam, in which he appeared to market the nation's passports, rather than its citizenship, in an unduly distasteful manner, more akin to a TV salesman selling buy one, get one free products. Many might not have noticed that foolhardy video, however, as the COVID-19 recession and its effects remained foremost on most people's minds. Many would remember, for example, when MoneyGram had distribution cash problems for incoming transfers, due to the lack of cash coming in from outgoing transfers, which was certainly linked to the ailing economy. That ailing economy was also affecting our bars, nightclubs, and restaurants, with many telling Observer at the start of the year how business had halved since the year prior. And yet, a handful of venues, a few reportedly in English Harbor, were accused of flouting the rules, which brought down the ire of public health inspectors. But there were high points in the first quarter of the year. The University of the West Indies, Five Islands, saw its first graduation, a signal to many of all ages that despite the pandemic, higher education was still attainable and worth the effort. The pandemic nonetheless radically changed the way we go about our daily lives. In the justice system, for example, in order to adjust, no jury or judge alone trials, rather, were debated throughout the first quarter of the year, with the Bar Association announcing at that time that its members were largely not in favor. The change went ahead months later, though, as a means of reducing the number of people needed in the court space. February began with more measures to curb the rapidly rising COVID cases, including an 8 p.m. curfew. The measures altogether limited the ability to socialize and do business, and it was rough for many people who were struggling to cope or who had simply not been coping and had fallen on hard times. Children were ordered out of the classrooms and back to virtual schooling, a troublesome mode of learning which parents, pupils, and teachers alike would lament throughout the year. One event in February which did not earn much applause was the Prime Minister's botched announcement that he had been vaccinated. It came out in bits and pieces, on radio, and in his Facebook commentary, at a time when vaccine skepticism was building up while the world's leading nations rolled out their vaccine programs. It led to a short-lived but fiery declaration by the Nurses Association that their members would not take the AstraZeneca vaccine, a brand different to the one the PM revealed that he'd gotten, ostensibly over a relatively lower efficacy. But that died down, and many nurses did immediately get vaccinated when a small batch first arrived from Dominica in February. Vaccines became the new topic of public debate, and much like other societies, misinformation became a huge problem in Antigua and Barbuda and remained a problem throughout the year. Do you remember all the claims? Aborted fetus cells, mercury, monkey DNA, infertility, the mark of the beast? It was indeed overwhelming. Another constant throughout the year was the debate over whether visitors to Antigua and Barbuda were being made to adhere to the COVID rules, the same as residents. Who could forget the video of a Valentine's Day event, no masks, no distancing, and a larger than safe number of people at the Hodges Bay Hotel at the beginning of the month? Toward the end of the month came the news that the former chief of Antigua's Financial Services Regulatory Commission, the FSRC, was sentenced to 10 years in prison for his role in connection with the infamous US $7 billion Stanford Ponzi scheme. Leroy King was extradited to the United States in November 2019, and he is a dual citizen of both countries. In March, there were a number of controversial stories that continued to keep our attention. A senior member of the police force was caught in plain clothes on camera in an altercation that led him to discharge his weapon. The other man, identified as then 23-year-old Curtis Redmond Jules, claimed that he had been sitting on his bicycle chatting to a friend who was on their veranda when a vehicle approached at high speed. He claimed the driver climbed out of the vehicle and suggested that the person smelt of alcohol. A bystander video of the incident shows Jules and the other man in front of the truck. Jules then appeared to be reaching into his pocket for an item which he later claimed was a cell phone before walking away. The camera briefly goes awry, and the next scene shows the other man, in a red shirt, appearing to follow Jules, and then the sound of a gunshot is heard. When it was identified that the shooter was a lawman, the force announced an internal probe to determine the truth of what really happened. But this is Antigua and Barbuda, so that's the last we heard of that. There was another March controversy that you might remember, though this one was a bit more comical, albeit not for those involved. This was the story of a man who said he'd spent nearly $120,000 over the course of years supporting a child that he always alleged was not his, but was now proven not to be his child by way of a paternity test, which he says the courts had, until then, refused to compel. This state of affairs, he said, had been ongoing since 2006. Returning to more serious news, there was also in March the revelation of an ongoing COVID-19 outbreak at the prison. It was controversial because it was an activist, Jessica Thompson, rather than the prison administration, that first alerted the public to the outbreak. Prison officers, who openly protested on their and the prisoners' behalf, alleged that COVID-positive staff were still working at the prison. Protective equipment was in short supply, COVID testing was irregular and inadequate. Prison officers were not prioritized for vaccination. Prison officers were sometimes working double and triple shifts. And people who had not been tested were routinely being remanded to the prison. The government soon responded to rectify some of the embarrassing failures occurring within the facility. It wasn't all bad news in March, though, at least not for the many citizens who took the opportunity to capitalize on the government's divestment of shares in the West Indies Oil Company. The move, long touted, was implemented that month and by all appearances went rather well. As March ended, the much despised, though seemingly effective, 6 p.m. curfew, which had been in place since mid-February, was reverted back to 8 p.m. As we look back now on the second quarter of the year under our society theme, we begin with former Police Commissioner Wendell Robinson's victory at the High Court in one of the many proceedings linked to his firing from the post of Police Commissioner. A High Court judge made a number of sweeping declarations on the matter. His removal from that post was unlawful and motivated by bad faith. Stripping him of his pension was unreasonable, irrational, and unfair. He was due damages, and perplexingly, the appointment of the current Commissioner of Police, Attorney Rodney, was unlawful, ultra-virus, and null and void. It raised the question of what such a declaration means for the current commissioner, or rather meant. In any event, the Police Service Commission appealed on the grounds of various irregularities in the handling of the matter at the High Court level and one at the appealed court. The matter was sent back to the High Court to be dealt with under another judge. There was, of course, in April, the controversy that surrounded a critical report on the governance of the University of the West Indies. It set off a flurry of commentary and accusations over the motives behind the report and how it reflected on the then Vice Chancellor Sir Hilary Beckles and his stewardship, especially as he was up for reappointment to the post. But the event that dominated April was not actually in Antigua and Barbuda. It was in St. Vincent and the Grenadines, where on Friday, April 9th, the La Soufre volcano erupted, causing weeks of ashfall, destruction, and pollution, and grinding St. Vincent's economy to a halt. This issue would continue to be a focus of the news throughout the year. Further afield, international headlines were later dominated by the guilty verdict in the trial over the murder of a black American man, George Floyd. Back at home, here in Antigua and Barbuda, in April, many business owners got a reprieve as restrictions were relaxed in line with falling COVID case numbers. At the very end of April came the unsettling news of a variety of illicit drugs found on schoolchildren after a search by police at the Pierce Secondary School. Many sometimes dismiss the danger that use of drugs in general can have on someone's life and their life chances. Interestingly, that connection was revealed in the stories of a number of vagrants who spoke to Observer's Alicia George in April about their circumstances and how they came to be on the street. The effects of COVID-19 on the economy continued to be apparent in a number of business closures, but many would remember the news of the Antigua Athletic Club announcing that it was ceasing its operations altogether in April, finding that the impact of the restrictions, on and off, since the year prior, was just no longer sustainable for business. Meanwhile, there was also a protest at the hospital in April over risk pay, and in the face of vaccine hesitancy, officials first began suggesting in May that mandatory vaccination might become a reality later. Observer Radio celebrated 20 years on air around this time, having come into being around the same time in 2021 under the leadership of Winston Derrick and Fergie Derrick. Still, in the second quarter of the year, the hospital was renamed after Sir Leicester Bird, and then in the controversy that defined May, Mehul Choksi was allegedly spirited away to Dominica from Antigua and Barbuda and arrested there for entering illegally. Choksi, a wealthy Indian-born man, wanted in his home country by law enforcement over alleged involvement in a large fraud scandal, told the press that he was taken against his will, put on a boat, and brought to Dominica bruised and traumatized. He alleged a conspiracy to remove him from Antigua and Barbuda forcibly and unlawfully in order to somehow get him to India. The government here suggested that it might be beneficial if he were not able to return to Antigua and Barbuda, where court proceedings to have his CIP citizenship revoked and to have him removed from the country have been long and drawn out in the courts. He was ultimately granted bail in Dominica and flew back to Antigua, where he presently resides. Last-minute changes to the format of CXE secondary and tertiary level exams were debated around the same time, with some voices in the region arguing that the year's circumstances up to that point demanded that changes to the exams be made. Things were mostly quiet in Antigua and Barbuda, though, and not many here were demanding such changes. In May, two incidents of severe beatings meted out to school students sparked a national debate on corporal punishment, albeit one that happens every year and then dies down until the next year. On this occasion, the Education Minister, Darrell Matthews, said he would support the abolition of corporal punishment. There was great discussion as to the sense or nonsense of allowing FETs to return, with organizers mounting an organized effort to present safe strategies for them to go ahead with vaccinated patrons only, and a number of dissenting voices calling the idea premature and even dangerous. There were, however, a number of FETs that have since occurred under strict rules. The tragedy of June was when the XPZ supermarket burnt down, adding to the economic pain already being felt by many in the country. And then there was the search for Alex, a Chinese man who was accused of burning down the supermarket. The month also saw the first cannabis license granted to a company called Grow Antigua. Another memorable happening from June was a highly racially charged incident at Old Road, where residents protested the allocation of agricultural land in the area to an Antiguan woman on the basis that they felt the said land ought to first be made available to members of that community, but also on the basis that the Antiguan woman, who appeared to be white, was, according to one startling remark by a community leader, not Antiguan enough in her parentage. It demonstrated that there was a dire need for a more open conversation about the nature of prejudices, classism, nationalism, racism, and colonial legacies in Antigua and Barbuda. As June ended, came news out of Montserrat that former Chief Minister David Brandt was convicted for sexually exploiting children after a long process of investigation and prosecution. It was a stark reminder that oftentimes those in positions of authority and power are sometimes all too slow to be held accountable for their abuses. The third quarter of the year began with shocking news out of Haiti, merely a week into July. The president, Jovenel Moïse, had been gruesomely assassinated. It further pushed the already teetering country into greater political instability. Back at home in the grade 6 national assessment, 11-year-old Aliane Challenger of Grace Christian Academy was named the top grade 6 national assessment student for 2021. In July, protests began over vaccination, specifically in response to the mandatory testing requirement that was to take effect around the third week in July. Protesters gathered outside the Prime Minister's office on Michael's Mount with signs and placards demanding that there be no pressure put on workers to be vaccinated. It was a mixed crowd, and some were arguing that vaccination was evil altogether. The government made testing free at some point, but protests against coercive measures would continue. Later, there was a growing debate over vaccinating children, as Pfizer vaccines, approved for use in younger people, were to arrive in the country soon. There were non-COVID issues that captured our attention, though. One could not forget the viral arrest video of a woman resisting a policeman's attempt to arrest her. She alleged that she was unfairly targeted after he made a pass at her and she ignored him. She later recanted after a trial and apologized to the officer. Meanwhile, two men were convicted for practicing medicine without a license after carrying out a botched circumcision. Vaccination cards came on stream in late July, and expectedly, there were no carnival celebrations in 2021. As August began, our attention was swept back to St. Vincent, where a massive anti-government protest was underway. In the midst of all this, the Prime Minister of St. Vincent and the Grenadines, Dr. Ralph Gonsalves, was assaulted when a projectile was hurled at him and struck him in the head. He was left bleeding and in need of hospital care. It sent shockwaves throughout the region, and no doubt put many other prime ministers' backs up in regard to vaccine protests in their own countries. At this point, we come to what is for many the most unforgettable incident of 2021, and that was the August the 8th protest here in Antigua and Barbuda. On Sunday, the 8th of August, a crowd of picketers gathered at the VC Bird bust along Market Street in the capital, St. John. Their purpose was to protest the government's COVID-19 and vaccine policies, but they'd originally planned the event as a march. They were denied permission to march, so organizers told the public that they would simply assemble there and picket instead of march. While pickets do not require police permission as marches do, there were at the time ongoing restrictions on public gatherings due to COVID-19, which the participants had surely breached. But nevertheless, they were peaceful, though obstinate. The activities on Sunday the 8th in the initial stages consisted of singing, chanting, and displaying placards, much of which was caught on amateur camera. Uniformed police were in the area. and then two trucks of riot police arrived, warning the crowd to disperse or face tear gas, and upon being ignored, began launching tear gas into the crowd at will. The ensuing confusion and panic saw uniformed officers being inadvertently tear gassed by their riot squad colleagues. Some protesters then became extremely violent and began hurling projectiles at the police, breaking windows and erecting roadblocks, then setting them on fire. Police began using rubber bullets as well. Bystanders having nothing to do with the protest were tear gassed as well as residents in surrounding residential areas. The entire incident left many with a sense of having been attacked by the police with extreme force in a manner that they felt demonstrated extreme incompetence. But the police defended their actions swiftly thereafter, however, saying that once participants did not heed the warning to disperse, the next logical step was to fire tear gas at them. The day following, the Commissioner of Police, Atlee Rodney, was asked if he would have handled the situation differently. He not only responded no, but also commended the officers for standing their ground after protesters began to riot in response to having been tear gassed. In fact, it was almost as if the rioting that began after the use of tear gas on the crowd became the primary justification for using the tear gas in the first place. Another major item of the month were the threats that Prime Minister Gaston Brown said he'd been receiving amidst the heightened tension surrounding vaccination and the police treatment of recent protests. Further afield, it was in this month that the United States pulled out of Afghanistan, rather calamitously, after 20 years. Still in the international arena, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, or IPCC, published yet another damning report in August on the pace of global warming and the already destructive effects it was having on the global climate system and the global environment. COP26 would follow in October and November. In September, nurses revealed to Observer the frightening extent of the burnout that they say they'd been facing as cases of COVID-19 climbed and climbed that month. Absenteeism, anxiety, exhaustion, safety, and strained family life were among their top concerns. There was a controversy over a pool party that month at the Royalton Hotel, where guests were seen in droves, without masks and without distancing, enjoying a party-like atmosphere. It led to strong words from the Minister for Tourism and the Attorney General, but not much else. In September, more protests would take place as the testing mandate in the public sector was scrapped for a mandatory vaccination stance. There was also resistance from the Barbuda Council, which at first said it would not implement the move until it had gotten legal advice. Several unions spoke out against the mandate, including the Antigua Trades and Labour Union, whose leaders were criticized in Parliament by the Prime Minister Gaston Brown. Also, the Antigua and Barbuda Union of Teachers spoke out against the mandate, and they too were criticized in Parliament, this time by Works Minister Lennox Weston. The Antigua and Barbuda Public Service Union actually made a legal challenge to the mandate in court. The late payment of pensions was an issue in September and would lead to protests later as it persisted. Schools remained closed throughout the month for face-to-face learning. And unfortunately, there were a small number of suicides reported in September as well. Just as the month was ending, internationally, the US singer R. Kelly was convicted for crimes related to sex trafficking and exploiting underage persons for sex. We move now into the last quarter of the year. October witnessed a global service outage from the company Facebook, responsible for Facebook, WhatsApp, and Instagram. The hours-long outage caused many to consider just how frequently they used social media and whether they ought to rethink their habits. The Pandora Papers were top in the international news in October as well. It was a massive leak of financial and corporate documents that revealed intricate details of webs and webs of offshore wealth havens and tax havens where the world's elite concealed their money. Here in Antigua and Barbuda, an elderly man would make the news for telling a magistrate that the reason he stole lingfish from a local supermarket was because his pension was late, routinely. It threw the crisis at Social Security back into focus. In Jamaica, several people died after a bizarre cult ritual led by now-deceased Jamaican cult leader Pastor Kevin Smith led to their deaths and led to a police intervention. Coming back to Antigua and Barbuda, local police reported being burnt out by the end of this year after months and months of enforcing protocols and curfews amidst the COVID-19 pandemic, as well as working in various roles on the front line. In November, the country marked 40 years of independence since 1981, a significant milestone that caused many to reflect on what had been achieved over the past 40 years. A private sector mandate as well as a vaccine mandate for schools, caused protests in November, including a massive one outside the Education Ministry one morning, to demand that the ban on unvaccinated pupils coming to school be removed. In a turn of events, the school mandate and the public sector vaccine mandate were relaxed after significant thresholds were reportedly met in regards to vaccinating those categories of persons. The rise in the cost of food became a stark reality in October, November, and December, and subject to much media attention and debate. But given that Antigua and Barbuda, like many other Caribbean countries, was a major importer of food, there was not much that could be done about it. November ended with Barbados transitioning to a republic, another politically astute move for Mia Motley, who would call a snap election some weeks later. The issue of this year's disappearing teens, those who stay away from home for various reasons, was highlighted in December, and then there was the worrying incident in which the identity of an alleged victim as well as the alleged perpetrator in an alleged sex crime were leaked to the public via a policeman's voice note. The police never made a public statement on the issue, nor explained or apologized over the debacle. One more arrest video would go viral before the year finished, as officers were caught on camera wrestling a Hispanic man, Kevon James, to the ground while placing him in custody. It raised some questions about the treatment of Hispanic people in the Twin Island state. There were many loved ones lost in 2021. Amongst the more public figures and personalities who died in 2021, were the former Prime Minister and national hero, Sir Lester Bryant Byrd, Sandals founder and longtime chairman, Gordon Butch Stewart, the journalist Imran Khan, the journalist Debbie Francis, the former UPP candidate Michael Burton, attorney Ralph Francis, and most recently, Rastafarian elder and ambassador to Ethiopia, Franklin Francis, properly known as King Franki. There were many other persons, of course, too numerous to mention.
Observer Radio's summary of the events of 2021 is presented under four themes: COVID-19, society, politics, and crime. The third theme, politics, is meant to be a recap of the major governance, policy, and party issues that dominated the year 2021.
The most important political issue at the beginning of the year was, of course, the budget. The Prime Minister, Gaston Browne, unveiled a $1.4 billion EC dollar budget in January, promising no new taxes, no austerity, and hundreds of millions in investment. Overall, the budget appeared to be an attempt to restructure public spending to maintain works, public safety, health, and the education budgets, while making sacrifices in the areas of debt servicing, pensions and gratuities, and a range of other items. The opposition in Parliament criticized the budget for presenting no stimulus to boost the economy when it was at its lowest, something they blamed on revenue squandered over the course of the administration since 2014. In terms of party politics, Trevor Young left the UPP at the start of the year, saying that he had been targeted for having supported Richard Lewis for the party leadership against Harold Lovell. Still with party politics, the budget gave scandal-accused former cabinet minister and St. Peter MP, Asset Michael, a public forum with which to lavish criticism on the prime minister in a manner he had never done before whilst in the cabinet. The scandal-accused St. Peter MP had been at war with Gaston Browne since 2020. Browne's position was that he'd had enough of Michael's alleged scandals, but little that goes on within political parties and between their members is actually revealed to the public. In responding to Michael during the budget in February, the Prime Minister revealed even more allegations of corrupt practices against the MP, which he did not provide evidence for, but which suggested that were any of it to be the truth, he, the Prime Minister, and perhaps even others, had been keeping it from the public until then. As is his habit, the PM remained in the public spotlight much of the year. He was next the center of attention when he revealed that he'd been vaccinated. It came out in a strange way, with him mentioning it in various forums briefly, but not going on to discuss it fully. It created a sense of suspicion surrounding his having been jabbed, especially for the anti-vax camp waiting for something to pounce on. He then became defensive and asserted that being vaccinated was his private medical business and that he had no obligation to reveal it at all. It had been the norm till that point for world leaders to get vaccinated in full view of the public so as to boost confidence in the rollout of their national vaccine campaigns. In general, the PM's vaccine debacle appeared to have been a rather poorly executed move that lost him some political points in the eyes of some people. In March, the Barbuda People's Movement, the BPM, made a clean sweep of the Barbuda Council elections, taking all seats that were up for grabs and completely ousting the minority party on the council, the Antigua and Barbuda Labour Party. The relationship between the ABLP-led central government administration and the BPM majority council had been strained for some time prior to the elections. There were also fundamental differences in the approach that both parties promoted for development on the Sister Isle. In April, the Prime Minister Gaston Browne's new farming company was getting off the ground to much criticism from members of the opposition party. The PM defended the new farming business, saying that others were the directors and he did not plan to devote his attention to running its day-to-day operations. He denied in any way benefiting from his position as Prime Minister when public lands were allocated for the venture, but insisted that this occurred according to procedure, as would have happened with anyone else's business. Commentators did suggest later that in order to eliminate suspicion and doubt over whether public officials are ever in any way using their position to benefit their business interests, Antigua and Barbuda needed a far more robust set of disclosure laws and a working integrity body. The Prime Minister was again in the news when he made a remark online in April in the wake of the volcanic eruption in St. Vincent and the Grenadines. The comment was controversial because it could have been interpreted as a sexual innuendo, and many thought the PM intended it as such, though he denied that it was ever meant to be taken in such a fashion. He was responding on Facebook to what appeared to be a female constituent who, in a comment, suggested that the only evacuees that should come from St. Vincent to Antigua and Barbuda should be, quote, old women, strong-backed young men, and sugar daddies. When the Prime Minister replied, he told the person that he had already told Ralph Gonzalez to send, quote, all the pretty young ladies. We need to expand our population, end quote. Some members of the opposition reacted to his comments with disapproval and even condemnation, which he dismissed. When the matter itself became a topic on Observer Radio's The Big Issues, Browne lashed out at the guests on Facebook, calling them conceited and self-righteous. His comments in response to the Big Issues discussion reached another low point when he called one of the guests, quote, probably a virgin. By late May, the United Progressive Party were promising to challenge mandatory vaccination were it to become a policy later in the year. The government would repeatedly accuse the UPP throughout the year of bandwagoning on anti-vax sentiment throughout 2021, as some UPP candidates held their own views about vaccination. And between its various candidates and spokespersons, the party itself seemed unable to present a consistent and unified pro-vaccination stance to the public in 2021. In June, the Electoral Commission was told to prep for elections, as they could be called at any time. This sent the opposition UPP into a soft campaign of sorts, in which it held a number of forums, digital events, and promoted its candidates in their various constituencies. Meanwhile, in June still, the Democratic National Alliance, the DNA, held its inaugural convention on the 27th of that month. It was a milestone for the party, but many asked whether it could muster the energy and the support to mount a serious challenge in the next general elections. By the third quarter of the year, the ABLP were polling to replace MP Acid Michael in St. Peter. Names like Regis Burton and Shermaine Jeremy were being thrown out, but ultimately it was architect and businessman Rawdon Turner who polled highest according to reports. The Prime Minister would come under fire again for his response to the August 8th protests, in which he took to national television to deliver what many considered to be an inflammatory and campaign-style address to the nation, where he blamed the main opposition United Progressive Party for the entire fiasco. Despite the atmosphere of heightened frustration, resentment at the police, and shock by many who felt that the force used to disperse protesters was excessive, even if they were gathered unlawfully, the Prime Minister heaped praise on the force for reacting the way it did. He further condemned the protest as having been infiltrated by, quote, desperate political elements and known criminals, whose actions he called, quote, a threat to democracy. The UPP voiced its opposition to mandatory vaccination at several points during the third quarter of the year, in response to the various announcements of mandatory policies. It dismissed, however, accusations from the administration that it was driving up vaccine hesitancy. In the last quarter of the year, the ABLP was again at odds with scandal-accused MP Asset Michael. In October, Michael and the Prime Minister were again trading words. Michael criticized Brown's abrasive style, and Brown accused Michael of being a crook by rehashing the IHI scandal from the Lester Bird era, in which Michael and others were investigated over suspicions of wrongdoing, but ultimately never charged. Michael has numerous times denied any wrongdoing in relation to that scandal and always held that any case against him was politically motivated. In October this year, Michael was barred from joining an APLP executive meeting. He secured a court injunction in November, restraining the party from barring him from doing so or from replacing him in St. Peter. That injunction was lifted in December, however. In December, as well, he was mired in yet another controversy as a police report was filed against him for a serious offense, which he publicly denied and again rubbished as politically motivated. In October, it came to light that the government had opted to establish a new special economic zone, Western Imperial. It's created a great deal of opposition from many who worry that the principles of the project will do little for the country and much to uproot whatever sensitive habitat might exist in that area. But the administration is pledging that it is all part of a larger effort to bring investment into the country. Meanwhile, in November, the three former UPP ministers accused of corruption in the now infamous bus scandal, Harold Lovell, Will McDaniel, and Dr. Jackie Quinn, were acquitted on charges of corruption, conversion, and embezzlement. After a two-week trial in the High Court before Justice Colin Williams, and after the prosecution's conclusion of its case against the accused, the defense argued that there was no case to answer, and the court agreed. But the DPP plans to appeal the verdict. It would be the second time the DPP is appealing a verdict in the bus saga. Interestingly, the trial revealed many practices which could be considered unethical that were occurring in the UPP administration, and it was also observed that the prosecution's case was not best prepared going into the trial. In December, former Education Minister ABLP MP Michael Brown was found not guilty on a serious criminal charge and acquitted. The details of the case could not be disclosed. He was set to return to the cabinet under a new post. Current UPP chairman Giselle Isaac won a victory at the Industrial Court with the assessment of hefty damages stemming from the unjust dismissal case that she has been fighting against the government in court since 2014, and she was abruptly sacked from her post at the Board of Education and subject to an investigation, which the Prime Minister later stated was motivated by certain members of his cabinet.
Observer Radio's summary of the events of 2021 is presented under four themes: COVID-19, society, politics, and crime. The fourth theme, crime, is meant to be a very brief recap of the major issues of crime that impacted residents in the year 2021.
Robberies and homicides stood out more than most other crimes in 2021, and this is where our focus lies on this theme. On the issue of robberies, in the middle of the year especially, many would recall a spate of such crimes being caught on security cameras and circulated widely on social media across the country. Some of the businesses held up at gunpoint were John's Delicious Pizza near the end of May, the OK Supermarket on Church Street and Newgate Lane around June 20th, a supermarket in Villa on June 22nd, the Golden Grove gas station on June 25th, which was an attempt that went awry. In the case of homicides, in April, three men were charged with the 2020 murder of Nigel Christian, the slain customs officer whose kidnapping and execution, allegedly by four assailants, shocked the nation. Additionally, throughout 2021, the four people accused of killing Bruce Greenaway in April of 2020 have been in and out of court on the charges against them related to his killing. In the case of Vincia James, the 26-year-old who went missing on April 7th, 2017 and is now presumed dead. When new evidence that might help her case was discovered in October, her mother reported that the family began receiving death threats from an unknown caller. As for homicides that happened in 2021, there were at least 16. On February 11th, a police corporal, Clifton Common, was allegedly killed by 20-year-old Verrill Simon, who was awaiting trial on murder charges, but in December was found dead in Her Majesty's prison. In May, Newfield resident David Roberts was allegedly killed by 26-year-old Jeffrey Daniel, who is now accused of murder and awaiting trial. In June, 50-year-old Cashew Hill mother of three, Althea Henry, was killed at her home. A 58-year-old Cashew Hill man, Lismon Boyd, has been remanded on suspicion of her murder. On July 9th, 33-year-old Marlon Christian of Herberts was shot and killed. The father of one was apparently fired at as he sat in the passenger seat of a car on Bishopgate Street at around 9:30 p.m. on that night. On July 21st, 42-year-old father of one, Pablo Francis of St. Johnson's Village, died while receiving treatment for stab wounds inflicted a week before. Alfred DeLise of St. Johnson's Village has now been charged with the murder of Steve Pablo Francis. On August 25th, 32-year-old Gibson Ricardo Christmas was killed on Tanner Street. He resided in Green Bay. According to law enforcement, the deceased was sitting in the vicinity of Country Pond along with two other males at around 9:40 p.m. when an unknown assailant walked up to the area and discharged a firearm. On August 23rd, 45-year-old Radradat Ramlakan was shot and died from his injuries while in his home in Grace Farm. According to police reports, the father of four, known to the community as Satish, received multiple gunshots to his upper body from what are said to be stray bullets. In the same incident, on August 23rd, 32-year-old Alexis Mussington of Cook's New Extension was shot by an unknown assailant around 10 p.m. on that night. It was reported that Mussington, who was on Bridge Road at the time, also sustained multiple gunshot wounds to his upper body. On September 11th, 50-year-old fisherman Selwyn Mannix was allegedly stabbed and killed by 26-year-old Kelly Friday of Bolands, who is now before the courts for the alleged crime. On October 4th, 66-year-old Canadian-born Piccadilly resident Jane Finch was found dead in her home, the victim of an apparent homicide. She was described as kind, sweet, and a gentle spirit. On the night of her death, Finch frantically appealed for help in a social media post stating that a young female had broken down a fence on her gallery and was attempting to break her windows and gain entry to her home. On October 15th, the body of 52-year-old Margaret Harris was found in some bushes on Wireless Road, and her killing is being treated as a homicide. She worked at the Customs and Excise Division. At the end of October, a burnt body, which has yet to be identified, was found in a trunk of a burnt-out car. On November 22nd, Zoraina Benjamin's body was discovered inside her home with a gunshot wound to the head, the country's 13th homicide. She worked at the Customs and Excise Division. On December 5th came the 14th homicide. The body of Nelta Telemach of Horsford Hill, Liberta, was discovered in the morning in the area of Burma Quarry. Her body bore multiple wounds and her death is being treated as a homicide. On December 28th, it is alleged that 39-year-old Jace Merrick was stabbed and killed by 31-year-old Richard Lewis of Willikies, whom police have since charged with murder. On December 29th, 64-year-old Leroy Caesar was allegedly killed in a cell at the St. John's police station by another man who is in police custody while they investigate. Both men were allegedly detained at the St. John's police station.